ring-streaked and spotted. And now that Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob was in a high and feeling mood, speaking only in a voice that trembled with emotion, and the self-satisfaction he showed was really culpable. The babe had been born at about midday, and the sign of the Virgin had risen in the east. Jacob knew that it corresponded to Ishtar, the planetary revelation of divine femininity, and he insisted on seeing in Rachel, the mother, a heavenly virgin and mother goddess, a Hathor and Isis, with the child at her breast, while his son was a marvel and anointed one, whose appearance was bound up with a season of blessing and rejoicing, and who would be nourished there in the strength of Yahu. He stands convicted of arrogance and lack of proportion. Mother and child are, of course, holy, but the most rudimentary regard for certain sensibilities should have prevented Jacob from making them into an image in the most offensive sense of the word, and of little Rachel an astral divine maid. He knew, of course, that she was not a virgin in the everyday meaning of the word. What sort of arrangement would that have been? When he used the word, it was only in a mythical and astrological sense, but he insisted upon the allegory with far too evident delight, tears of self-indulgence standing in his eyes. And since he was actually a shepherd, and the beloved of his heart was named Rachel, a ewe, what more natural or even more charming than that he should call her babe the Lamb? But the tone in which he spoke of the Lamb that had come forth out of the Virgin was by no means jesting. Rather, it seemed to claim for the little rascal in the hammock the sanctity of the immaculate firstling and sacrifice of the flock. All the wild beasts, he said in his fervor, would attack the Lamb, but it would conquer them all, and peace would come over all the earth and upon angels and men. And he called his son a branch and a shoot from the tenderest root, connecting it in his over-poetic soul with the image of the spring of the world and the beginning of that time of blessing in which the heavenly youth would strike down the mighty with the staff of his mouth. These were all emotional exaggerations, but yet in Jacob's mind the coming of the blessing time had, insofar as it was a matter of his own personal time, a very practical meaning. It meant the blessing of riches. Jacob was convinced that the birth of a son to the true wife was a guarantee that his business affairs, however much or little they had secretly profited while he had been serving Laban, would now take a steep and decisive upward trend, that the filthy underworld would, after this, unreservedly bestow all the treasures of gold which it possessed. With the thought, indeed, was bound up a higher one, from the realm of feeling. He envisaged his return treasure-laden to the upper world and the land of his fathers. Yes, the coming of Jehoseph was like a turning point in the course of his life, which ought strictly speaking to have coincided with his departure out of Laban's kingdom. But that could not be. It was in itself not advisable. Rachel could not travel. The recovery from so frightful a childbirth was slow and difficult, and left her pale and weak. Nor was the exhausting Eliezer journey of more than 17 days to be thought of for the infant. It is surprising, it is almost ridiculous, to see how lightly these matters are sometimes decided and dismissed. Thus we are told that Jacob spent 14 years with Laban, 7 and 7, at the end of which Joseph was born, and then he departed for home. And we are told expressly that at the meeting with Esau at the ford of Jabbok, Joseph came near, and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. But how could a babe at the breast draw near and bow? At that time Joseph was 5 years old, and these 5 years it was that Jacob still lived with Laban after the 20, and indeed under a new contract. He could not leave, but he could behave as though he meant to go at once, and thus put pressure on the clod Laban, for he could be got at in no other way than by exploiting the stark necessities of business life. So then Jacob spoke with Laban and said, "Let my father and uncle graciously incline his ear unto my words." "Before thou speakest," Laban hastily broke in, "rather hearken unto me, for I have that which is pressing to say. We can no longer go on as we are, and I cannot for long endure the absence of legal regulation in the affairs of men. Thou hast served me 7 and again 7 years for thy wives, according to our contract, which is laid up below with the teraphim. But since some years now, I think since 6, contract and document are out of date, and there is no law any more, only use and routine, so that no one any longer understandeth where he is. Thus is our life become like a house that is built without any level, and is, to speak openly, like the life of beasts. I see clearly, for the gods have given me eyes, that thou comest for a reckoning, since thou hast served me without conditions or contracted reward. For thou hast stored up all kinds of goods and possessions which I will not count, since now they are thine. And when my sons, Beor, Alab, and Muras, have made long faces over them, lo, I have rebuked them, for it is a labor worthy of its hire. Yet must it be governed. Therefore, let us now go and make a new contract for another 7 years, and thou wilt find me ready to treat with any condition which thou art minded to make. It cannot be, Jacob said, shaking his head. Alas, my uncle wasteth his precious words, and need not have wasted them had he first listened to me. For I speak not to Laban in the matter of new contracts, but in the matter of leave and permission to depart. 20 years have I served thee, and thou thyself must needs bear witness how I have performed my service. For I myself may not, for the sake of seemliness, take the words in my mouth, which alone are fitting to use. Yet it would be fitting that thou shouldst use them. I deny it not, said Laban, that thou hast served me well, and without reproach cometh not here to speech. And I am grown old and gray in thy service, without need, Jacob went on. For Esau's anger is long since spent, and the ground therefore that I have left my home. The childlike nature of my brother, the huntsman, retaineth no longer any memory of the ancient tales. Years since might I have gone at any hour into mine own land, but I did it not. And why did I it not? To give the ground, therefore, there are but words to use, and the using of them would not be seemly for me, since their quality is praise. But now Rachel, the heavenly maid, in whom thou art grown lovely, hath borne me Dumuzi, Joseph, my son and hers. Him will I take with my other children, sons of Leah and of the maids, and mount and ride, that I come into my land and my place, and at length take thought for my own house, as I have so long done only for thine. That I would regret in the truest sense of the word, answered Laban. And what I can do, that I will, that it may not come to pass. Let my son and nephew speak freely and unfeignedly what he demandeth in the way of new conditions, and I swear to him by Anu and Eliel that he will find me well inclined towards any reasonable demand. I know not what thou wouldst find reasonable, Jacob said, considering what were thy possessions when I came hither, and how they have extended under my hand, so that even Adinah thy wife was drawn into the circle of growth, and with unhoped-for vigor brought thee 3 sons in thy gray old age. Thou couldst have spoken, yet wouldst thou not speak. Therefore will I also be silent and go. Speak, and thou wilt remain, responded Laban. Then Jacob named his condition, saying what he would have as the price of his staying another year or so. Laban had expected much, but not this. In the first moment he was staggered, and his mind wrestled with the problem first of understanding the demand, and then of giving the needful counterstroke. It was the famous story of the speckled and spotted sheep, told 1,000 times by fireside and fountain, 1,000 times celebrated in strophe and antistrophe in honor of Jacob the shepherd, and as a masterstroke of ingenuity and shrewdness. This story, of which Jacob himself in his old age, as he sat musing, could not think without a smile that curled the thin lips through his beard. In a word, Jacob asked for the pied sheep and goats, the speckled black and white, not the ones already born, we must understand the matter aright, but the speckled and spotted ones which should be dropped in future from Laban's flocks. They should be his hire, and be added to the possessions which he had for long stored up and accumulated in his uncle's service. It was a matter of dividing between master and man the sheep which were bred from now on, though not precisely in equal halves, for the larger half were white, and the smaller pied, so that Jacob's request was in the nature of selection. Yet both well knew that the pied were fat and fruitful more than the white, and Laban said so at once, with mingled anger and respect for his nephew's cleverness and audacity. "Thou thinkest of things," he exclaimed. "A man might be stricken in sight and hearing at thy demands. So thou wouldst have the speckled, the excellent fat ones. Not that I have as yet said no, for I gave thee free to ask, and I keep to my word. If this be thy condition, and thou persistest in it, otherwise thou wilt go hence and tear away my daughters from my heart, Leah and Rachel, thy wives, that in my old age I behold them no more, then be it as thou wilt. Yet must I frankly admit that the matter goeth to my heart." And Laban sat down as though he were taken with a palsy. "Hearken," said Jacob, "I see that my condition smiteth thee sore, and is little to thy liking. But since thou art own brother of my mother, and hath begotten Rachel, the starry virgin, and my true and most beloved wife, so I will condition my condition, that it may be less frightful to thee. Let us then pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted, and all the brown ones among the sheep, and put them aside from the white, so that the ones know nothing of the others. And after that, what is dropped speckled, that is my hire. Art thou satisfied?" Laban sat and blinked. "3 days' journey," he suddenly cried out. "3 days' journey shall be set between the white and the pied, and there shall be separate breeding and tending between them, so that the ones know naught of the others. For so I will have it, and so it shall be sealed at Haran before the judge, and laid by below with the teraphim, and it is my absolute condition." "It is harsh for me," said Jacob. "Yea, it is harsh and oppressive. Yet from the beginning have I been aware that my uncle thinketh with sternness, strictly and unbendingly in business matters, and therefore I accept." "Thou dost well," Laban answered, "for never should I have departed from it. But hearken and tell me, which herd thinkest thou to pasture, and to let pass under thy staff for thine own person, the speckled or the white?" "It is lawful and natural," Jacob said, "that each shall guard his own, from which he shall have the profit. I will take then the pied ones." "Not so," cried Laban then, "by no means. Thou hast made thy demand, and it is a mighty one. But now it is my turn, and I will ask what seemeth to me the least and cheapest for the honor of the business. Thou agreest with me anew in this contract. But if thou art my servant, then the interest of the business demandeth that thou guardest the sheep that shall profit me, the white ones, not the ones that shall drop for thee, the party-colored ones. Beor, Aleb, and Muras, my sons, whom Adinah so proudly bore in her old age, they shall tend the party-colored sheep." Jacob said, "so be that also. I will not obstinately set up my will against thine. Thou knowest my mildness." Thus the bargain was struck, and Laban knew not the role he played, nor how he was being fooled to the top of his bent. He was too slow-witted to see the point. He wanted above all to cling to the blessing, and reckoned that its effect would be strong enough to outweigh the natural superiority of the speckled sheep. He knew that the white flock, from which, after the parting of the herds, pied yearlings were not to be expected, would propagate more freely under Jacob's care than would the colored ones under the faithful but heavy hands of his sons. Clod that he was, he reckoned indeed on the blessing, but without enough foresight to imagine the issue of Jacob's shrewdness and inventive spirit, to say nothing of even dreaming of the plan which stood in the background of his son-in-law's demand and concessions. The sagacious reasoning based upon extended previous experiment which was at the bottom of it all. For we must not think that it was only after the bargain was struck, and with intent to turn it to his advantage, that Jacob hit upon the deep device by means of which he bred his sheep ring-streaked and speckled. The idea had originally been without thought of gain, a play of imagination, and tested in a scientific spirit. The bargain with Laban had to do only with its application. It went back to the time before Jacob's marriage, when he had been an expectant lover, and his interest in breeding had been keenest and warmest, had originated, in fact, out of sympathetic divination and emotional inspiration. One can really not praise enough the intuition which showed him how to make nature confess one of her most miraculous secrets, and to confirm his discovery by experiment. He discovered the phenomenon of shock in pregnancy. He found out that when the female was in heat, the sight of the party-colored animal affected the lamb which he then dropped, so that a party-colored animal was the result. I must emphasize the fact that his curiosity was entirely abstract, that the pleasure was entirely intellectual with which he set down a record of the successes he achieved. Instinct taught him, however, to conceal from Laban and from everybody else this insight he had gained into sympathetic magic. But the thought of turning his knowledge to his own profit was a secondary one, and only crystallized when he came to drive the new bargain with his father-in-law. To the shepherds, in their songs, the result was everything, the apparatus of a very clever piece of overreaching. How Jacob had snapped his fingers at Laban's precautions and systematically robbed him of his own. How he had taken rods of green poplar and of the hazel tree and pilled white streaks in them and set them before the flocks in the gutters when they came to drink, where they were accustomed to copulate. How the flocks conceived before the rods and brought forth lambs and kids, ring-streaked, speckled, and spotted, although they themselves were white, and how Jacob had done this especially at the spring running, whereas the later and less productive animals might be Laban's. All this the shepherds said and sang to the accompaniment of their lutes, and held their sides with laughter over the priceless trick. For they had not Jacob's piety, nor his knowledge of mythology, and did not know the sense of duty which guided his action. First, that he might be helpful to God the king in carrying out his promise of riches, and secondly, because that devil Laban had to be deceived, who had deceived him in the darkness with the stately but dog-headed Leah, because the saying had to be fulfilled, which said that one did not leave the underworld, save laden with the treasures which lay there so richly spread forth among the filth. Thus then it was. There were three flocks, the white, tended by Jacob, the brown and party-colored, watched over by Laban's sons, and Jacob's own flock, accumulated in the course of trade during these years, tended by his own servants and under-shepherds, to which from time to time were added the colored yearlings dropped by the party-colored herd and the bewitched white one. And it was after this fashion that the man grew so heavy with possessions that it was the talk and the admiration of the whole region. The number of cattle and maidservants and men-servants and camels and asses the man called his own. In the end, he was much richer than Laban, the clod, or than all the owners of businesses who had been invited to his wedding.